has numbered my days, and I'll go along with everything you say.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The walls of my town, they come crumbling down. And my ears hear the call of my unborn sons, and I know that choices color all I've done.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Norris.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
To the best crew any captain ever had, this may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. For Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Leyland.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this, our fourth episode of Listen to the Prophets, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. This is a show where we talk about what we believe to be is the best Star Trek series after Star Trek proper in simple sequential order. Unless Netflix puts the shows out of order, then we might just have to cop to being pretty clueless in our research. This time out, we're continuing our look through the first season of the show with the fifth episode, another good ensemble character-building episode entitled Babel. And along for the ride are my two non-aphasia-suffering cohorts, unfortunately I'm suffering from that, producer Paul Spataro and Admiral Andrew Leyland. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Episode,
I like that I've been promoted.
TV show on.
Cabbages, laptop, dust.
See, it's harder to do, you know, just right off the top of your head than it is in the show. You know, when we get to the show and talk about it properly, I think they actually scripted stuff out for the characters to write this weird Babel language. But you know, we're talking about Babel this time out. Do we have anything we want to talk about before we get into the show particularly? Did anyone do anything Star Trek-y since the last show?
I've not done anything Star Trek-y, but I did my research on this episode.
Ooh, nice.
And you want to know some trivia?
Yes, I would.
Is it better to bring it up first or to bring it up as we're going through the episode?
No, it's better to bring this up first because it may give you a better feeling on the show itself, and certainly why I felt that maybe it's not quite as strong as it should be. This was a reworked Next Generation script idea. Reworked for Deep Space Nine when they were running out of ideas very early on in the production of the series. Not running out of ideas. When they're scrabbling around for scripts when a show first starts, they reworked this from The Next Generation. And I think that shows in the final episode. I didn't notice any interesting guest stars in this one. Did you two?
They had a couple of characters who worked on the... who weren't part of the cast, who were part of the production crew. Specifically one of the visual effects coordinators who made a sort of cameo as Deacon Ellig. But other than that, there are a few little, like we had last time, little screenshots of Kira watching something on there that have some amusing things. But we'll get to that in its own time.
Yeah, I have no trivia on this episode because, once again, as always, Andy's preparation puts me to shame. But I went to New York Comic Con last week, and although I would not purchase one personally, they had just some of the coolest Star Trek uniform shirts and stuff. And probably, it's probably an oxymoron to say coolest, but they just had some of the, they just looked, you know, really well made, let's say it that way.
So, like, actual from the original series, or are we talking next gen, or what are we talking about?
I could say yes. They had original series, they had Next Gen, they had DS9, they had like the jumpsuit ones, they had a bunch of different stuff. I didn't even venture in to see what the prices were because I was afraid they would be cheap enough for me to buy one, and then I would just further cement my my standing among my family. And
see, I am always...
I was going to say, I don't have a standing amongst my family anymore.
See, I have always wanted to get one of the sort of classic Star Trek II uniforms, that one with the collar that folds down. I always loved the design of that uniform, the very militaristic look of it. And I always wanted to get that and, you know, come to the next Star Wars celebration dressed up like that. You know, and just walk around and go, fascinating.
I always thought, like, as like kind of a sweater or, you know, just an over jacket kind of thing. The one that they introduced on TNG, and then in the same season they went to them in DS9. I guess they introduced it in First Contact, and then the following season of DS9 they had the same one, that gray one that almost had like the sweater material on it.
Oh, yeah.
I always thought that was kind of cool, and again, that would just cement my standing even further.
Yeah, that was a classy looking uniform. I liked it when they went to the gray design. I think it worked better with Deep Space Nine than it did with Next Gen, because it gave it, because Deep Space Nine was essentially a darker feeling show. So I thought the design element for that uniform worked really well with Deep Space Nine. But yeah, if that's all we've got, you know, sort of preamble stuff, we'll go ahead and hit the synopsis here.
Voyage to Deep Space Nine, where an alien virus threatens the crew.
Doctor, we have an emergency in crew quarters.
He'll be dead in 12 hours.
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
This one, as I mentioned before, was entitled Babel. It was the fifth episode of Season 1, and it aired on or around January 24th of 1993. The episode was written by Michael McGreevy and Naren Shankar, with story by Sally Caves and Iris Stephen Bear. It was directed by Paul Lynch and starred our main cast, as well as Jack Keeler as Captain Jaheel, Matthew Faison as Sir Mac Wren, and as usual, I stole the synopsis from the Star Trek Deep Space Nine Companion by Terry J. Erdman and Paula M. Block. Plagued by a rash of mechanical breakdowns, Chief O'Brien finds himself inundated with maintenance requests from every quarter, including Commander Sisko, who wants the station's replicators to provide palatable coffee. O'Brien wearily attends to the replicator, and to his surprise, managed to coax it into producing a perfect cup of coffee. In the process, however, the Chief unknowingly triggers a long-dormant device in the station's food replicator circuitry. Not long after, Kira is startled when O'Brien, who appears sweaty and pale, begins to speak in gibberish. Bashir's examination of the Chief is puzzling. He shows no signs of physiological damage, but appears to be suffering from an unusual form of aphasia. When Dax is struck with the same malady, Bashir determines that both his patients have contracted a virus that affects the neurosynaptic pathways. On the heels of that discovery, two more crew members become aphasic, and Sisko places the station under emergency quarantine. Odo's subsequent investigation of some suspicious activities on Quark's part leads to the discovery that the Ferengi has inadvertently been spreading the virus by illegally accessing station crew food replicators to serve his customers. But when Bashir discovers that the virus has mutated into an airborne strain, it becomes clear that they will soon be dealing with an epidemic, and that no one on the station is safe. As the virus continues to spread, affecting Sisko's son Jake, Kira finds the device that triggered the outbreak. Because it's based on a Cardassian technology, they assume at first that the planned epidemic is an act of Cardassian sabotage. But Bashir's analysis of the virus's genetic structure proves that it was actually part of a Bajoran plan to destroy the Cardassians who once controlled the space station. With the virus becoming more deadly by the hour, their only hope is to find the Bajoran who created the virus, and hope that he also created an antidote. Kira discovers that Deacon Ellig, the inventor of the virus, is long dead. However, Sir Mac Wren, who once served as Alec's medical assistant, is not. On a desperate hunch, Kira debards for Bajor, and beebs the unwilling Bajoran aboard her runabout, in the process exposing him to the virus. Reluctantly, Sir Mac agrees to return to Deep Space Nine and help discover an antidote. Back on the station, a panicky alien captain attempts to break quarantine by leaving the station without permission. His attempts to pull away from the station with the mooring clamp still attached doom his ship and endanger the docking ring. But with Sisko incapacitated by the virus, Odo is forced to rely on Quark to help him save the captain and release the ship from the clamps just before the vessel explodes. In the Deep Space Nine infirmary, Sir Mac follows up on Bashir's research and discovers the antidote, allowing life on the station to return to normal, and the coffee to revert to its previous non-toxic but impotable state. And a kind of bland synopsis for this episode. What do we think, gentlemen?
I thought that there's some lovely character bits in it, particularly between Quark and Odo, mm-hmm. and between Ben and Jake. And I love when Chief O'Brien is just playing the much put upon member of the crew who is in charge of fixing everything. It's like he doesn't have anyone else who works with him. He has to do everything. So that was all good, but its roots as a Next Generation script are quite plain. I thought they've done this kind of Virus of the Week show before. The original did it with The Naked Time. The Next Generation did it with Naked Now. And for the most part, once it cut back to the plot stuff, I actually found the episode a little bit dull. It's the character moments that save it from being a complete waste of time, really. Particularly Armin Shimerman and René Auberjonois.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the development between Quark and Odo in this one is really what sets it apart from episodes like, yes, The Naked Now and The Naked Time. It is one of those episodes that does feel that it is repurposed. Now that you mention that, I can definitely see it. But I think that you're correct. The character elements, especially, like I said, Quark and Odo, which Odo being one of my favorite characters on the show, is nice. It's nice to see their quote-unquote friendship developing, their one-upmanship, their camaraderie, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. And I liked Kira in this one, that her first reaction is, well, this is obviously a Cardassian plot. And then later on, when it's proved to not be that, but actually a Bajoran one, she's completely unrepentant. She's just like, yeah, well, whatever. I did like her in this, and I do like her resolution to the problem.
Yeah, it's a little different than the typical TOS or TNG solution.
Yeah, I like she basically
that. Although I
could
see Riker doing that.
I don't know. Riker's a bit of a stuff shirt, really. I mean, Kira basically kidnaps the guy. And yeah. There's the wonderful bit at the end where she actually says, are you alone? And in your mind, you're going, is she asking, is he alone so he doesn't get exposed to the virus? Or is she asking, is he alone so nobody sees what she's doing?
I think the latter, definitely. I think that she knows that if anyone finds out that she illegally transported him aboard an infected spaceship, that she would be in such trouble. So, yeah, I think it's definitely that.
Now, I didn't know your trivia fact on this until you just said it now, but having had a chance to kind of digest that thought, I can definitely see what you're talking about. My thoughts as I was watching this and afterwards were, it feels like a TNG script. And now that you've said that, it even feels more like one of the early episodes of TNG. Of TNG, where they were using scripts that were meant for the other show, the original Star Trek II, Phase Two that they were going to do, and that they were repurposing them to make them TNG. And it does really have that feel about it. But I think they did a decent job of rewriting on this to bring in the characters and have those character moments and having it be something that was going on in this particular world. Certainly the idea that the Cardassians would develop a virus and that the Bajorans would steal the technology and try and turn it against them and use it to take the station really does make sense with the world building as it's going on here. So I wasn't quite as down on it as you two were. I liked it just a little bit more. I don't think it was, you know, a really top-notch episode by any stretch of the imagination, but I wasn't as bothered by it as you were. I still found it to be somewhat entertaining. I thought, you know, that there were a fair number of character moments. I still see this as at a point where they think O'Brien is going to be one of their central characters, and that's why they're writing him in quite so much. But I like I said, I found it to be entertaining.
Yeah, no, see, I don't disagree. They did an exceptional job of rewriting the character moments to fit DS9. It doesn't feel like there is an episode of TNG, Devil's Due, isn't it, that was a Phase 2 script. And Brent Spiner has gone on record as saying basically all they did with that script was cross out the name Kirk and put Data, and cross out the name Picard and put Spock, or the other way around. When they repurposed that, they did very little rewriting to it. Mm-hmm. And this does feel like they've took the idea of the original Next Generation pitch or script or whatever it was and rewrote it from head to toe to make it a Deep Space Nine episode. Well, so you've not got that situation where they've just crossed out names.
Like the scenes I'm sorry to interrupt you, Andy.
No, you're
right. The scenes with Ben and Jake, you can't see the corresponding characters that they could use on TNG to do those scenes.
Yeah, that's exactly the point I'm making. They've had to rewrite this completely because they can't just make Picard, Kirk, and Data Spock. They don't have those analogs here. It just really wouldn't feel right. So they have had to rework it considerably, but the basic plot is, it doesn't feel like Deep Space Nine. It doesn't feel like a Deep Space Nine idea. And that was ultimately what kept me from enjoying it. That and the resolution's god-awful. The entire resolution is handled in the last 4 minutes of the show, that Kira finds the guy, kidnaps the guy, takes him back to Deep Space Nine, says, "Ah, basically you're infected now, so find me a cure." And he goes, "Oh, right, if I double reroute the science through the science and then do this with the science, hey, there's a cure." The end.
If I reverse and the polarity.
The ending, if they come up with a more tense ending, I think I may have bought into it a bit more. And I really didn't like the cliche Kira and Sisko are the last to get the virus. I mean, I get that from a dramatic point of view. I understand that completely. But from a viewer point of view, that just felt really contrived. And I couldn't help but think they missed an opportunity to have Sisko get it first and have somebody have to take over ops who maybe has never done it before and can't handle it. That may have been
interesting. Which you could have done. Easily, yeah. Because Sisko is not a central character in this episode.
No, he's largely irrelevant to the action, by and large.
Well, and also if you go by the fact that the virus was initially transported through food, through ingesting it, since Sisko drank coffee from one of the replicators that supposedly had been infected by the virus, he should have been one of the first people to get it, because you notice Dax is like the second person to get the virus or to come down with aphasia because she ate the whatever pudding or, you know, frosty beverage thing that Quark was having up at when he started getting the replicated food. So it would have made sense more if Sisko would have come down with it sooner in the episode.
That was also an excellent scene. Did you not think where Odo busts him?
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it. It's again the interplay between Quark and Odo is one of the things that I really enjoy, especially with these early episodes and taking on later into the show. They're sort of back and forth, the sort of Casablanca, not Hugh Laurie, but what's the guy's name? You know who I'm talking about in Casablanca. The police officer and Rig.
Peter Lorre.
Is it Peter Lorre?
No, not Peter Lorre is not the police officer.
Oh, Peter Lorre, he was the German guy.
Talking about Claude Rains.
Claude Rains, yes. Claude Rains and Humphrey Bogart. You know, their relationship is very much the way I see the relationship between Odo and Rick. Or Odo and Quark.
Odo and Rick, that would be a brilliant episode.
If we could get Humphrey Bogart on the show, I'm certain they could do CGI and get him.
That would be fantastic.
But I also like the fact that throughout all of this, Quark is, you know, thinking that people are trying to fake this aphasia thing to get out of paying for him, and it's all essentially his fault. I just Quark is. I know people like to dump on the Ferengi characters, but Quark has been really exceptional these few opening episodes. So I'm looking forward to more of this.
It's like Quark is the apology, isn't he, for what was it called? The Last Outpost in Next Generation. Mm. Where the in Next Gen the Ferengi just morph into comedic foil and nobody takes them seriously. And although Quark has a great deal of comedy in him, you get to see his ruthless side in this episode as well. He's completely unrepentant that he's caused this. He's only helping because he expects to be paid. But he's so gleeful with it that you can't help but like him.
Well, and you get that in the scene where he's helping Odo. You know, it's only Odo and him, you know, in ops. And the scene where he says, you know, I'll beam you to the outer ring so you have to be able to get there before the ship explodes. And he says, oh, by the way, I've seen this done dozens of times, as he energizes Odo on the pad. It's great. There's some really wonderful comedic beats between these characters, and it's great to see the development of them here.
Yeah, and that scene with Odo was tense and dramatic, and that kind of made up a little bit for the actual ending of the show being a bit weak.
Mm-hmm. The exploding ship portion of it was a nice tense moment, and yeah, the finding out, the discovering how to fix the virus was kind of lame.
I got the sense that he didn't help out just for the money. That if push came to shove, he was going to help no matter what there. But since he was going to help, and he saw an opportunity to push for money too, I mean, why not? He's a Ferengi.
That's his facade, isn't it?
Yeah, but
he pretends he doesn't care.
Exactly, and that's where I thought Armin Shimerman did a pretty good job with it, because I got that sense from him that he was going to, you know, it was almost like when Odo asked him about why he would do it, and then he just threw in the money thing to explain it away, but that he would have done it anyway. And I like that. Very, very important here, guys. Did either of you see Morn?
Yes.
He walks past them in the corridor, doesn't he?
He just had he didn't really have much of a role. He just had a bit role where I think he walked into Quark's, and that was about it. But he was in this episode, so I do remember seeing him.
Okay. Yeah, we've been making a Morn count. I don't remember seeing him in the next one we're going
to
do.
I'm pretty certain I did, but you know, I may have. Right. I can look.
I did make a mental note that in Babel, you kind of just see the back of his head walking past somebody, and then he is sat at the bar later on, but he's kind of like it's only his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the scenes that I thought fell a little flat was when the customer was basically trying to torture Quark by making him eat the food that came out of the replicator. It just didn't seem quite right to me when it was going on. I don't know what about it could have been written better, but it just felt a little forced.
I think it may be specifically because this was a repurposed episode that... That's why that some of these little bits don't feel right with Deep Space Nine.
With the hindsight of knowing what happened, it's that it's just not organic. It didn't come up and say, hey, this is a good thing to do with Quark. It came up and they said, well, how can we work this into the show? Well, let's use Quark.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I mean? And maybe that's the problem.
It's kind of the same thing that I saw initially with Sisko yelling at O'Brien at the beginning because his coffee tasted funky. That seemed more of a thing that I would put on Captain Picard doing, getting upset about that, rather than Sisko. And it just, there were these little things that felt out of place in the show and felt like they didn't fit with the characters that we've seen so far.
Especially the little funny tag ended where Sisko tastes his coffee and then says, oh, O'Brien! Mm-hmm. And you just expect the cheesy 60s music to kick in as they all have a jolly good laugh. And all of that. But really all I could think of was, poor Chief O'Brien.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he almost dies. You know, they say that he's got, you know, Bashir says he's got 12 hours to live after, you know, catching the virus and then going into this fever state. And then, you know, all that Sisko can do is yell at him for his coffee not tasting good. You know,
if I was O'Brien, I'd have been on 24 hours sick leave after that. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have been back at work straight away.
There were a couple of you mentioned in the previous episodes, there are a couple of things you should watch for, like when they're doing computer screens and such. I caught one of them this time. Supposedly, the crew at the time were big fans of the TV or the cartoon Ren and Stimpy. And in the image where Kira is looking up about Deacon Ellig, trying to find out about who created the virus and all this, there's a comment about Cermak Ren. Ren, as in Ren and Stimpy. So is the name of the guy that she beams up on the runabout was named after Ren and Stimpy. And if you stop and pause at the very last second of that screen that she's reading the text from, there was something that happened with him that said he was arrested on charges of terrorist activity relating to the kidnapping of Gull Spumco.
Spumco
is the corporation that's big by what John Kay and all the Ren and Stimpy shows. So I found that just incredibly amusing, these little Easter eggs they put in there. So that was kind of fun.
I have to be more diligent in that, because those went right by me. Those would bring a smile to my face if I saw them on my own. They still do, even with you finding them, but they would be more so if it was me.
Oh, it's... Yeah, once Andy mentioned them in the prior episodes, I'm watching them now on my computer, and I will, freeze frame whenever it comes to a screen or a text piece or anything like that to see if I can catch any of these little Easter eggs, because it's always fun.
They're mostly... Cudagrams, aren't they? Michael Picuda tends to put those in quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And Deacon Ellig was Dan Curry, who's the visual effects producer on the show.
Yep.
Which I thought was a nice touch.
Yeah, it's nice that they put give little cameos, even if it's simple, just image cameos for the creators, put them in the show. It's a nice way to keep them included rather than just sort of behind the scenes. So that's a cool thing to do.
One of the things, that we discussed when Paul wasn't part of the conversation, Sean and I discussed this before we were on the show.
I wasn't there, it didn't happen.
Well, that's why we're bringing it up now, so you're included. What do you think of the plot of this episode, once again mirroring what we're going through at the moment with a virus that is being unleashed and everyone's a little bit panicky? It seems very odd to me that twice we've done this now, Deep Space Nine, now 20 plus years old, still feels current.
I would say it falls a little short of reality, I guess that's not too much of a leap there, but it falls to a little short of reality in the fact that if you look at how things are right now with the level of fear people have with such a, at least at this point, and God willing, it'll stay as minimal as it is, but with such a minimal outbreak in the United States and the level of fear everybody has of it, compared to watching DS9, where they're in a very confined place with, a relatively small population, and they just seem to be going about their business, and they don't seem to have that level of fear or panic with what's going on that would echo reality.
Well, we kind of get that with the Captain Jaheel. He's pretty much the major panicky character in this episode.
He's almost a cartoon character the way he's played too.
Yes, very much so. He's especially when he's first introduced at the very beginning of the show, tapping O'Brien on the shoulder, trying to get him to get his ship fixed and everything so he can leave. But I do like the fact that there were specific protocols for making sure that the virus doesn't go anywhere. They went on immediate lockdown. They radioed ships not to dock at Deep Space Nine. They made sure that no ships could leave. It's nice that they had a protocol to say, this is what we do in case of this, where right now here in the States, we're not really seeing that happen. There's finger pointing everywhere and no one really knows exactly what kind of precautions we need to take. So I like the fact here that in the future on Deep Space Nine, a viral outbreak of this type there's a protocol behind it and there's the way that they handle it. And here nowadays, there doesn't seem to be as much of one.
Yeah, I can agree with that. You would think, especially over time, that would become something that's far more defined and they would have protocol in place for it, which we don't currently really have. I'm sure there are certain things. It certainly hasn't filled people with confidence when the government says, yeah, we got it under control, it's never going to happen here, and then it happens here. but you could see where that level of you know, current lack of confidence might lead to better protocols coming into place. But I just wish there was a little bit more realistic fear spreading among the community, a little, you know, dread, whatever you want to call it. This did, they just seem to all be very stoic about it, and, you know, yeah, you know, they could be dead in 12 hours. That's a bad thing. you know, and I think it should be just a little bit more heartfelt.
Well, I think that comes back to this being a Next Generation script rather than a Deep Space Nine script. There is a feeling, I think, that this, if this episode had come later in the run, there would have been more fallout from it, there would have been more ramifications to it. And like you said, the cartoony captain, you're used to Deep Space Nine having more nuanced characters than that.
The only one I truly felt some, you know, some real emotion about it was Sisko when Ben gets it.
Oops, I'm afraid Paul meant to say Jake instead of Ben. We'll forgive him since he was only on his first cup of coffee for the morning.
But even that's poor, kind of purely Avery Brooks acting and not even the script that really gives you the feel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Avery Brooks really sold it when he saw Jake suffering from the aphasia virus.
You know, yeah, the look on his face.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Jake was one of the worst. He portrayed the sickness probably the worst out of all the people who got ill, I think. Sadly.
Yeah. I think Cyril Lofton's inexperience as an actor went against him here.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't really capable of selling it in the way that Cole Meany was. Yeah. Or just the look of resignation on Nana Visitor's face when Kira gets it. I think you're right, but I think that's just an experience as an actor thing. I just don't think he was capable of doing that at that point in his career. Yeah. He'd probably be much better at it now.
Oh, definitely.
But they could sell this much better than he could just by dint of being more experienced at this point.
Well, and we'll see later on in the series that Cyril Lofton does grow. Like we said, all of these characters grow into, or all these actors grow into the characters really well, and we'll get to see all these characters progress and, you know, become more mature, obviously, over aging time. But yeah, I think his limited acting experience definitely did a disservice to him in this episode.
Because there is a very real danger of just throwing out random words and saying stuff like the unicorn, Aston Predator, and it just, there's a very fine line between selling that as being dangerous and selling it as being campy.
Mm-hmm. Because think about it, it's difficult to sometimes just speak openly in a normal speech pattern. Well, I call myself out on that, but to speak in gibberish and to make it sound like it has a flow to it is really difficult. So I think they did a good job scripting it out. I think Cole Meany did a great job, you know, portraying that language in a way that it was naturalistic but gibberish. So unfortunately, I agree, Cyril Lofton didn't quite have the delivery that the other characters did.
Now, with regard to the aphasia, you know, you talked about the resolution. There was a point where I thought the resolution was going to be more similar to Darmok, and they were going to actually find the connection between what they were saying and how they were actually communicating thoughts as opposed to pure gibberish. And, yeah, that never happened.
Yeah, because there never seemed to be sort of like a Rosetta Stone from English to this other language. So what they were saying in this other gibberish language could be easily translated, because from one person to another, it didn't specifically translate back into something. You know, if someone said porcupine, it didn't mean phaser. You know,
No. There was none of that, but that's what I thought it might be going at one point. I thought it might be that they were speaking Esperanto.
Only Shatner can speak Esperanto.
Only Shatner can make that work.
And, I've heard people say he does make it work, but I've never seen that movie.
I totally believe it. I think that man can make anything work.
I've seen the movie. He makes it work. The movie, however, doesn't work all that well. But that's for another episode. Do we have anything else we want to get out about this one before we head to emails?
No, I think the fact that we seem to have very little to say about it.
Yeah.
kind of sums up the episode. On Mission Log, which is a Star Trek podcast, they do ask the question, if you were flipping through the channels and this came on, the big test is, would you leave it on? And I think with me, the answer would be, if I flipped it on in the middle of a Quark and Odo scene, I'd leave that scene on, and then I'd carry on moving down the channels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of have to agree. When we discussed this last time, and I said, you know, O'Brien fixes the replicators, and that was the sort of synopsis that Netflix gave, the quick synopsis, I was like, oh, is this going to be one of those crappy first season episodes? And it wasn't a bad one, but it definitely wasn't as good as the prior episode. So there you go.
And it's not as good as the next one either.
Oh, no.
I'm going to say I probably would stop. If I stopped on it, I'd probably let it just keep running. But that may be more of a bad reflection on me than a positive reflection on the episode.
Well, no, I think it's Deep Space Nine. Sometimes you just want to have something playing in the background, and this is an enjoyable thing to not have to, you know, sit and watch, I would say. But, you know, it's enjoyable to have going.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to context as well. I'd rather have this on in the background while I'm reading or doing something else than something like Real Housewives or Honey Boo Boo.
Oh,
yeah, well, that's. I guess I come down to a bad episode of DS9 is better than a good episode of many, many other shows.
Yeah. And, at least this one made you think a bit. As
have we taken to rating these shows?
No, we haven't. Do we want to give these shows a rating?
How many Bajoran nose ridges would you give it?
Out of how many?
I don't know how many ridges do they have on the nose?
Do we want to rate it? I mean, on Back to the Bins, we do it on a letter grade like school. We could do it on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 to 10, or letter grade. What do you think is best?
We could do it. Yeah, we could do it on Gold Press Latinum, 5 being the top.
Okay.
And this
since it's my suggestion, yeah, I'll jump in first, and I'm gonna go with this as firmly in the middle. It's not terrible. There are moments in it that you can go for, but it's not particularly creative. Some of the acting lacks, and I think a lot of the interaction is just lacking, like that it just isn't there. Except for Odo and Quark, there really isn't a lot of interaction between the ensemble cast. So I'm gonna go with this. If I'm thinking, if we're doing on a scale of 5, 2.5 would be firmly in the middle, so I'm going to give it a 2, because I'm going to say it's a little low. It's a little lower than even the midpoint. Midpoint would be, you know, where you'd say, all right, this is a decent episode. I'm going to say it's just slightly below that and give it a 2.
Andy?
Who's going? Oh, all right, you're waiting for me. Okay,
yeah,
sorry. It's a 1 piece of Gold Press Latinum elevated by the character moment, so I'm going to go with Paul and give it a 2.
I'd probably have to come in with you as well. There are some weak acting bits from some of the characters, but I think Odo and Quark definitely shine. Again, them trying to hang the hat on Chief O'Brien to be her breakout character wasn't working. He was interesting, but I don't think he carried the show. So yeah, I think a 2 bars of Gold Press Latinum for this episode would be a good enough rating.
Do you know what else we should do as well? We should go back and rate the other ones so that we could keep a log of what we've rated episodes.
Okay.
All right. So the pilot, I give 4.
Same here, 4.
I'm going to jump you on that, and I'm going to say 4.5, because I think it's nearly, like, close to a perfect pilot.
The reason I give it a 4 is I think the show gets much better. Judged as a pilot, you're probably right. Judged as an episode of Deep Space Nine, I'm erring towards a 4.
Hey, you know what? I'm going to revise, because I'm thinking about it as we're talking. We're doing this on the spur of the moment, so I hadn't given quite enough thought. And I do remember I had some criticism of some of the writing, you know, little sitcom-y or whatever. So I'm going to drop it down to a 4, and I'll go right with you guys on that.
Sean?
I think I said that it was going to be a 4 for me as well. You know,
for Emissary?
For Emissary. I thought that was a, you know, it was a great pilot. There could have been, you know, it set the groundwork for the series, but I think the series does get better from there, and it progressively gets better. So it's a very good start, but the show does improve. So giving it a 5 overall for the beginning just doesn't allow for any growth, and there's definitely room for growth starting off with this episode.
Yeah, and like I say, with Emissary, there's two ways of judging it as a pilot on its own, or judging it as an episode of the overall series, which is why I went down to a 4, because I think Deep Space Nine gets better than its pilot. But as a pilot episode, it's very strong in and of itself. A Man Alone, I'm going to go 2.5 for that one. I didn't think that one was great, but it wasn't awful.
I hate to be so compliant, but yeah, I kind of agree with you on that.
It is pretty boring that we all agree, don't we?
Yeah, how do we get together on this show and actually, you know, like each other and like to talk about the same things and enjoy the same things in the same way? What the hell is wrong with us?
Yeah, I think people come into this hoping that we're going to get into a cat fight every week are going to be really disappointed.
I'm certain there'll
not
be
a cat
episodes.
Fight, but I would like to present, you know, divergent points of view every once in a while where we disagree with each other. That would be nice.
I'm certain there'll be.
I think we'll get that as we go along. I wouldn't worry about that too much.
Yeah, A Man Alone.
I'm worried about it. So now we got some difference.
A Man Alone was a good episode. It you know, it set up the character of Odo. It was nice to see it be a variety of things, not only, you know, the Western, you know, frontier town type thing. It set up the characters of Keiko O'Brien teaching the kids in school. So I might go a step higher and say a 3. Still not great, but, you know, a decent enough episode. And past
okay,
prologue's the next one.
Past prologue. Oh, I'm torn between a 3.5 and a 4. Come back to me after I've heard what you guys say and I'll disagree with you, just to keep Paul happy.
I'm going to go 3.5. I think it's an above average episode, but I don't think it's hitting its stride yet. I don't think it's reached the level of Emissary. It's got some really good world building moments in it. The script was solid. The acting was solid. It is a very good episode, but it is not, you know, it's not one necessarily that if you were, you know, gonna try and pick like the one or two best episodes of each season. I don't think it necessarily is on that level. So I think it just drops a step below, and I'm going 3.5.
I'll go ahead and give it a 3. It was better than Man Alone. I think it had more character moments, and the whole idea of the terrorist plot behind it was, like we said last time, was very prescient. And when sci-fi works at its best, when sci-fi is at its best, it's able to reflect what's going on in reality, and this does it really well. So a good 3, I think that's what I'd give it.
Right, I'm going to disagree with both of you then and give it a 4. I'm going to go up instead of down.
No problem.
It's a 3.5 episode, I agree with you. There are better Kira episodes, but it's the first time we get to see what a brilliant character she is. But I'm giving that extra slither of gold press latinum simply because Andy Robinson was in it.
Oh, God, I forgot about it. Okay, now I've got to bump it up. It's
oh, it's come on. No, we've got disagreement, though.
I'm sticking at my 3.5. I'm thinking Garrick is one of the reasons why it jumps up to a 3.5.
Okay.
Right. Fair dues. All right, so there we go. You can go back, lovely listeners, and pretend that we rated them from the beginning and that we actually knew what we were doing at this internet radio broadcast lark. Oh,
dear God, no one knows what we're doing.
Including us.
True. Let's see, we've got a couple of emails. Do we want to...
Are all 4 of the ones in the basket new?
Yes.
Incoming transmission.
I'll go ahead and... Do you want to do Gene or do you want to do Mark?
I don't know if I have enough time to read all of Gene's.
Edit it as you go. That's what I...
It's only a half a paragraph.
It's one sentence.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking at my reply to it. That's the...
Yes, that's a paragraph.
Okay.
Should I read your reply as well? No, okay. Gene writes into us, it's no Jaws.
That's how we should rate the rest of the episodes. You know, how close to a Jaws is it? Or how close to, you know, the Naked Now is it? So
what was the shark on Jaws? A 25 footer?
Yeah, he was 25 foot. Yeah.
So we could rate it on a scale of 1 to 25 based on Jaws.
That works for me.
All right. Well, Gene writes, Sean, Andy, and Paul. Hey. as you all said, the story on this one wasn't so great. ... That's it. That's his whole letter. And we agreed.
We did. We totally agree with that.
Actually, did you? Because mine's got a bit longer. It says, "Click it open."
Oh, okay.
It is a little bit longer.
It is. That's because the way Gmail works is
it minimized.
Sean replied to Gene's email, and it had the reply fully in, but the initial email was shrunk down, and it only had that one thing. So let me start that one again. Sean, Andy, and Paul. I don't know where he got that from. As you said, the story in this one wasn't so great, but we did get some great character moments. Yeah, the regrowing of the clone was a little odd, but I'm glad they at least tried a murder mystery. Looking forward to the next one, Gene. P.S. It's written so small and my vision is not as good as it should be.
I think it's cutting.
I'm cutting this one short since it sounded like I couldn't stop typing. I don't understand what he means it sounded like. P.P.S. Now I have to figure out a way to get Adrian Barbeau on Legends of the Superheroes.
Yes, you do.
And if you can, we'll all be happy to join you.
We will be happy to join you where she is. Adrian Barbeau. Oh, okay. Well, thanks, Gene, for writing in. We've got another letter this time out. This one is from Mark Kalmbach. And this one says, Dear Deep Space Nine people, so he's lumping us all in, so no one gets their feelings hurt. Paul. Not a bad series, but since Mr. Paul, producer Spataro, did insist that he wanted suggestions for improving the show, you know what I think? The show needs more Dr. Bill. Oh, sweet Jesus, no.
I'm going to jump in there, and I would say every show could use a little bit more Dr. Bill.
I did a show recently.
There's only so much Dr. Bill to spread around. What's that?
I did a show recently. There's more Dr. Bill.
That's your Quantum Leap episode or something else?
No, that's the one.
Maybe. I know we kind of joke about Scott Gardner not wanting to do Deep Space Nine. We kind of poke fun at him, saying that he would never want to be on the show, but he has contacted us and said, eventually, if you get a chance, he'd like to do a guest spot. So I wouldn't be opposed if one of us had to step out, or if one of us couldn't make it, we can pull in Dr. Bill or pull in Scott or Honeywell or anyone else, because this is a family affair here. That sounds creepy, sorry, but we wouldn't mind having Dr. Bill on the show.
In fact, we'll throw it out. If you've got a specific episode you would like to be part of, let us know.
And we will laugh as we don't let you on.
you're just bitter about the whole thing with Professor Allen and the afterlife with Archie thing. I understand, Paul. Well, he'll have you on for the next episode.
No, you won't. You've already recorded the next episode.
We're gonna be doing the next trade. Once that comes out next year, next Halloween, you're on. There you go. But Bark also finishes up saying, that having been said, Listen to the Prophets episode 2 wasn't too bad. Well, that's a ringing endorsement. And certainly better than the Next Generation's second episode, Code of Honor, at least.
Okay, yeah, I don't think he was saying our episode wasn't that bad. I think he was saying the DS9 episode wasn't so bad. Or at least that's how I'm gonna take it.
I'm hoping that's the case, because we strive for being better than Code of Honor, so there you go. Definitely better than
how we've set the bar.
Yes,
we here at Listen to the Prophets work very, very hard to achieve mediocrity.
Oh, if you only know how many hours I've spent making the show sound as mediocre as it does.
And just for what it's worth, with as far as the name Producer Paul goes, I have relinquished all producing duties on this to Sean, and I'm only available as requested, but Sean is the producer on this show.
Yeah, so if it sounds like crap, send your hate mail to me.
And if it sounds really good, then I helped him.
That's probably true, actually. But do we have anything else before we want to wrap up? Nope, good.
I'm good.
So, Andy, hit us with the what's coming up next.
Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, Chief O'Brien gets mixed up in a new variation of the 1929 novel The Most Dangerous Game.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."
Okay. Hey, Paul, you on?
Depends on how you define on.
Okay.
You sure? What'll get you out of bed?
Yeah, okay. That's what heroin's for.
Is it? Really?
Yeah. Well, okay. And other things, but
being a clean living.
You know, that's just like so. You know, ridiculous when there's crystal meth out there.
Oh well, yeah. I should look into that. It's cheaper.
See, my you get the right lab going, you can make it yourself.
To be honest, the lab that I work at probably does have a majority of the chemicals that I could use to make crystal meth if I actually wanted to look that stuff up, which I do not.
It makes it very clear. Yes. Before people start knocking.
I'm saying this right into the microphone, into Skype, so if the NSA is listening, they know that that's not what I'm planning on doing.
We're not threatening to overthrow anyone or do drugs.
No.
Yet.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Son of a Bitch. 5 words in and I've already f***ed it.
Have you rechristened the show? Is it now called Son of a Bitch?
Yes,
welcome
it is.
To Son of a Bitch.
You could have told us.
You didn't get the email.